Welcome to the School Sucks Project, a podcast, YouTube channel, and online community dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense.
We promote learning alternatives, home education, critical thinking, peaceful parenting, organization and productivity, and better communication strategies.
Please remember to visit schoolsucksproject.com to get comprehensive show notes, relevant links,
or to just leave comments.
Follow us on Twitter at SchoolSucksShow. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, username SchoolSucksPodcast, and get involved in our Facebook group. Just search for School Sucks Project.
Hey everybody, this is Brett. Welcome back to School Sucks. Today is January 9th. Do you know that right on the front page of our website, schoolsucksproject.com, it says that we strive to provide young people with the building blocks of intellectual, financial, and lifestyle independence? Considering those last two forms of independence, there is a subject we haven't paid enough attention to over the last few years, certainly over the last year. I want to change that in 2018. This is going to be a subject that we revisit hopefully monthly. And there's some very good reasons why I wanted to start the conversation with Roger Veer. And you will learn what they are in the upcoming discussion. The title of today's show, The Block is Hot, is a reference to Lil Wayne's first solo album from almost 20 years ago. And I should tell you, the phrase "the block is hot" originally meant a situation where the cops have arrived or the cops are scoping out an area. Over the last two decades, I've used this phrase and I've gradually appropriated it to mean any situation where shit is going down or about to go down. And in the case of the Bitcoin world, it is the former. And plus, it has the word block in it, you know, so that's a podcast award for most clever episode titles goes to. What I'm saying is that unless you live in a tree, you have certainly been exposed to, over the last 4 months, the debate between proponents of what is now known by the retronym Bitcoin Core and the recently emerged Bitcoin Cash. It's a story at least 5 years in the making, and we're going to cover some of it on the podcast today. For those of you who are in the process of trying to figure this out, like I am, Steve Patterson has been a great go-to. I think Steve is on hiatus right now, but I really valued his input on this subject. And of course, Brian Sovereign from Sovereign Tech. And I always really enjoy when he has Stephanie Murphy on Sovereign Tech and they talk Bitcoin. So those are just some of my recommendations in the public sphere if you're looking to learn more about this. I've put a lot of time and effort into trying to understand this issue better since I returned from my cross-country trip. I want to thank a few people who've helped me along the way. The first is my friend John Luzzi. John and his wife, Jahida, have been longtime listeners, supporters, and cheerleaders of School Sucks. It was John who actually encouraged me to really study up on this conflict and eventually think about reaching out to Roger as a guest. I also have to say I'm very pleased with some of the crypto advice that I've gotten from my friend. You know what? Our friend of the show, Daryl Becker. Daryl actually has a consulting service for crypto. You can check him out at dbcrypto.com. Just a little backstory before we get started. So what we're talking about here is scaling Bitcoin, getting more people to adopt this and use it as money. As I understand it, the assumption from the beginning of Bitcoin is as the technology grew, as the user base expanded, the block size would increase from 1 megabyte. At this point, this hasn't happened. And almost going back to the beginning of the scaling Bitcoin conversations, there was a contingent that wanted to keep the block size in place, and their argument was the 1 megabit block size was necessary for the sake of decentralization. So the argument is if the block size increases beyond 1 megabyte to 2 megabytes or even bigger than that, with the growing amount of data on the blockchain, it will be harder and harder for the average computer user to have access to the full ledger because of computing power and memory. But people like Roger have responded to this, talking about Moore's Law, which is the idea that the overall processing power for computers doubles about every 2 years. So I'm really not sure how much it matters that a user like me might not be able to have access to the full ledger, that I might not be able to run a node myself. Even though I am aware of the fact that the number of total nodes decreased rapidly over the last few years as the blockchain has grown, there's an agreement that was reached early in 2017. It's called the New York Agreement, or SegWit 2X. So SegWit, which is Segregated Witness, it's basically like a software update, simple terms. That was added earlier in the year as a way to speed up transactions inside the block without the block actually having to expand. The second part of the New York Agreement was that in November, just 7 weeks ago, there was supposed to be a hard fork creating something called Bitcoin 2X, where we would have a doubling of the block size. This did not happen, and that was a source of great frustration and disappointment for many. So that will come up on the show today as well. There was lots of intensifying conflict over the course of 2017, starting very early in the year, escalating in August, escalating again in November. The block is very hot, as Lil Wayne might say. It was also frustrating. I would read through forums. I would see both sides. Because I lack certain technical knowledge, these investigations would often end in a draw for me. I didn't know which side I should be on. I will tell Roger in the discussion you're about to hear that with a very limited understanding of the development side of Bitcoin, I obviously lean more towards the Bitcoin Cash side, or the expanding block size of this debate. But we all know that when looking at a conflict, siding with one position because you don't understand the other one, that's lazy thinking. So I'm making an effort to understand both sides. But perspectives matter here, too. There's a question of what do you want, crypto? Well, specifically here, Bitcoin. What do you want Bitcoin to be? What do you want to use Bitcoin for? And as more and more people have converged on this space in the last 5 years, really like in the last 2 years, we now see that there are very divergent outlooks, especially for those of us who were originally attracted to Bitcoin because we thought it had a lot of promise as a way to, using Roger's words, separate money and state. And as far as financial freedom is concerned, that is like a very desirable outcome. But as we've watched the price of Bitcoin skyrocket, those ideals have been crowded out to a certain extent by conflicting financial incentives, many of which I am still working to fully understand. So considering the amount of controversy and the level of detail inside each controversy, we're not going to be able to get to it all on the show today. If you don't like what you hear today, hey, don't get pissy. Don't you think enough people are pissy right now? Suggest somebody you'd like to hear me talk to about this. Like I said, this is an ongoing conversation. It was important for me to start with Roger because I have a ton of respect and appreciation for what he's done. But he is far from the only voice in this conflict, so your suggestions are appreciated. That being said, let's get to it. I hope you enjoy this. I hope you find it educational. Thanks for listening, everybody, and take care. You know, I was sharing with some people in my audience that I was going to have you on, and many were very pleased and impressed that I had attracted such a high-profile guest, especially right now in the midst of this conflict and all this attention in the crypto world. There's at least a segment of my audience that would be interested in a little history here, though. Was the Ridiculous Wheels Off Liberty podcast actually the bridge that brings us together? Is that how you first heard about School Sucks?
It very well may be. It was either there or Free Talk Live. I was an avid listener of both around that time. So, I've listened to your own podcast, the School Sucks podcast, of course. It's been a few years because I've been busy with Bitcoin stuff, but I've always enjoyed every episode of your podcast that I've listened to as well.
Awesome. So I'm also glad that you mentioned Free Talk Live because I wanted to give a little background and share with my audience and maybe even people beyond my audience why you're here today. So this is going to illustrate what my perspective is, but it's going to reveal a little bias on my part. I think I first heard about you maybe 6 years ago. If I remember correctly, you started sponsoring Free Talk Live with your company Memory Dealers. And around that time, you started to get involved in Bitcoin. Is that timeline about right?
Yeah, I think actually I started sponsoring Free Talk Live before Bitcoin. So it's probably been 8 or 9 years, maybe even 10.
Absolutely.
At this point.
So my perspective as somebody who is a Free Talk Live listener, a member of the Free State Project, Obviously, the whole scope of the Bitcoin thing has expanded almost an incalculable amount since then. But you were a person who came to Free State Projects events, came to the Free Talk Live airwaves, and you introduced this technology to, you know, the anarcho-capitalist, voluntarist, libertarian community, and you put a tremendous amount of work into promoting it. And then, of course, in the last 6 years, many people that I know, I've seen this firsthand, have experienced significant increases in financial freedom, lifestyle freedom. Those are two of the things that we talk about on School Sucks. And, you know, I think you get a lot of credit for that. So I know in this whole conflict that is much larger, and the whole Bitcoin world is much larger than it was when we first heard about it, there's certainly going to be people who are frustrated that I can't appreciate why they don't like you. But I want to just be clear, that's the position that I'm coming from. I saw you as somebody who had a very sound philosophical and economic foundation on which you tried to promote this technology. And there were a lot of really tangible gains realized for a lot of people that I know, a lot of people that I'm close to. And, you know, it's made me very excited about the future, which at times in the last 5 or 6 years, from the voluntarist perspective, looked kind of bleak. So I thank you for that.
No need to thank me. It's been fun for me. And, you know, you only get one life, and it goes by very, very quickly. So I want to work as fast and hard as I possibly can to make the world a better and freer place as quickly as we possibly can. And before Bitcoin came along and cryptocurrencies came along, the future did look bleak. There didn't really seem to be an answer to this solution of government controlling more and more aspects of people's lives. And then when Bitcoin came along, suddenly there was this, you know, magic tool that we can use to reduce the amount of control that governments have over all aspects of all people's lives in every country around the world. And, you know, I was a signer for the Free State Project for, you know, years and years and years. I don't even know how many years ago I signed up for that now. And that was, in my view, the most exciting tool to bring more freedom to at least one little tiny corner of the world. But for me, cryptocurrencies are several orders of magnitude more exciting than the Free State Project. And I'm still a fan and a supporter of the Free State Project, but I see cryptocurrencies as being a, you know, free society project that can liberate the entire world, not just one little state in the U.S.
Absolutely. So, okay, Roger, that's the warm and fuzzy part. There's a lot of people here who definitely owe you and others a lot for your promotion of this technology. It seemed like at the time, I don't think we've even talked in like 5 years. And at that time, the last time we spoke, it seemed like the entire crypto world, which was pretty much just Bitcoin and maybe Litecoin at that point, was something that existed inside the sphere of voluntarism, libertarianism, and anarcho-capitalism. That it was like a property, cryptocurrency was a property of that philosophy. What's obviously been revealed in the last 5 or 6 years is a kind of Venn diagram between the Bitcoin world or the crypto world and the voluntarist world, and it's kind of separating into two distinct spheres. There's obviously still plenty of overlap, but there are people who are deeply involved in Bitcoin on the mining side, on the development side, who have different goals, different needs, different political and economic guiding philosophies. And it seems like since maybe the block debate, block size debate started, maybe as long as 5 years ago, there are two distinct camps. One that is, you know, I think your side that is more in line of what my goals and needs for Bitcoin originally were, and another side that I don't understand as well, that is more technical. And I'll just, my history here is like when a lot of this was heating up throughout November, when the SegWit 2x didn't happen, and it seemed like there was an increasing amount of acrimony. You know, I came home, I quickly tried to catch up on everything that had happened in this debate. It was very easy for me to kind of side with you that Bitcoin Cash is the real Bitcoin. I don't want to say the real Bitcoin, but what was most in line with Satoshi's vision and what was most in line with my needs and goals for it when I originally heard about it, what attracted a lot of us to it back when it first appeared in 2011. But the problem is many of us myself included, have very little technical knowledge, especially compared to the people who are on the mining side, the people who are on the development side, a lot of the people who are obviously on the opposing side to yours, the Blockstream. So I want to try and understand the split that's happening right now. And I guess the best way to do that would be to ask you to create, you know, a strong argument, a kind of steel man argument of the Bitcoin core side. How would you describe that?
Sure. So the strongest argument that I think that the Bitcoin core side has is that if we allow the block size to be determined by the market, it will increase to such an extent that normal people won't be able to run full nodes. And if fewer people are running full nodes at home, it will make it easier for governments to shut down Bitcoin worldwide. And that's their fear. And of course, I share their fear. I don't want Bitcoin to be shut down worldwide, but that's the gist of their argument, is that people aren't able to run full nodes themselves because the hardware is too expensive, because the free market decided to make a block size that was bigger than what people could run on home hardware. Then the government would be able to shut down all these nodes around the world because they'd be at, you know, businesses and data centers and things like that.
Okay, so let's kind of go back and we'll do some history and some introduction here. And I'm going to start with a very novice question. Why does the block size or block space demand, why do these things matter in this whole debate?
So when I first heard about Bitcoin, maybe one person somewhere in the world was making a Bitcoin transaction every 30 seconds or once a minute or something like that. Mm-hmm. And now today, you know, millions and millions of people all over the world are trying to use Bitcoin. And the Bitcoin network can only support about 3 people using Bitcoin per second worldwide. And the reason it can only support 3 people per second worldwide is because all those transactions have to be included in a block. And that block is limited by people that decided that they know what the correct block size is. They limited it to 1 megabyte. And in 1 megabyte worth of block space, you can fit around 2,000 transactions. And that works out to about 3 transactions a second. And so the solution from my point of view, and from many, many other people's point of view, and from Satoshi Nakamoto's point of view, the creator of Bitcoin, is just to allow the blocks to become bigger as more and more people start to use Bitcoin. So if the blocks, instead of being 1 megabyte each, are allowed to be 2 megabytes or 10 megabytes or 20 megabytes or even gigabytes or terabytes someday, that allows people all over the world to use Bitcoin, and the transactions will be just like the Bitcoin network operated when I first started spreading Bitcoin to people. Most transactions were basically free and they were basically instant. And so this Bitcoin core team have intentionally made Bitcoin transactions slow, unreliable, and expensive in terms of fees. And if you have a product that's slow, expensive, and unreliable, people are going to seek out alternatives. And that's why we've seen people start to use things like Bitcoin Cash and Ethereum and Dash and all these other ones out there. So
you think this is intentional, that the core side has done this?
It's absolutely intentional. You can read their own words. They openly say that they want the Bitcoin network to have high fees and full blocks. And a direct result of the blocks being full makes the transactions unreliable because everybody's in a bidding war for space within that block. And you don't know what the other people that are going to bid right after you broadcast your transaction are going to bid. So you might get, even if you think you're going to be at the front of the line for inclusion in a block, 2 seconds later, if a bunch of people bid more than you, you're now, you know, farther back in the line. And so they've openly said that they want to have this fee market where the fees are high and the transactions are unreliable because of it. So if that's their stated goal, which it is, they've succeeded in that. And for any businessman, you realize that you want transactions to be fast, cheap, and reliable. And that's the vision for Bitcoin Cash. And unlike the Bitcoin Core people who basically have central planning in regards to the amount of block space to be produced, they've decided that 1 megabyte is the correct amount of block space to produce, whereas I think anybody that studies some economics realizes that we don't know the right amount of block space to produce. The people that are paying for the block space and the people that are producing the block space are the ones that need to determine what the correct amount is based on the amount that people are willing to pay for it and based on the amount of money and effort it costs to produce that block space. So you have central planners versus people advocating that the free market decide how much block space to be produced, and you have people that want Bitcoin to be slow, expensive, and unreliable, and people like myself that want it to be fast, cheap, and reliable and usable for everybody all over the world. And for me, it doesn't seem to be a tough decision at all which one of those two versions of Bitcoin is more useful. And I guess one other final thing I'd like to point out is that you have the Bitcoin Cash side of this debate, that supports free and open and vigorous discussion on these issues and allow people to speak their minds and say what they think. And on the Bitcoin Core side, they are engaged in, I don't know if censorship is necessarily the right word, but they will literally, on the discussion platforms that they control, they will literally delete anybody's post that isn't in agreement with their vision for the future of Bitcoin. Whereas on, you know, Bitcoin.com, a website I control, people are on there and they can say all sorts of mean and nasty things about me, and I don't delete their posts. I'll refute it with logic and evidence and reason. But I support people being able to engage in free and open dialogue about these issues. The Bitcoin Core people clearly do not. And when you point this out to them, they just say, oh, well, who cares, is basically their attitude. And for me, I think, you know, I have a loud voice. I'm the CEO of Bitcoin.com and have become a kind of, a, you know, a minor celebrity in all of this. So, but what about all these people that don't have this, you know, same platform that I do, and their posts and opinions are literally being deleted, and they're not even being allowed to engage in the conversation. I'm sure there's lots of people out there that have lots of interesting things, and the rest of us are being prevented from hearing about it because of the censorship that's going on. So
sure. So, okay, let's, the anecdotes that I've heard related to that are most of this seems to take place in a subreddit called r/Bitcoin, which is, as far as I understand, and from based on the anecdotes that I've heard from people who engage with others there, is devoted to Bitcoin Core. So I do have friends who have posted in r/Bitcoin asking questions or talking about Bitcoin Cash. And yeah, those posts are removed, and the justification that they're given, I mean, I think this makes it seem a little less malicious to me, is they say, look, Bitcoin Cash, at least as far as the people who are moderating there are concerned, is not Bitcoin Core. Those are two distinct things. But this is a forum for Bitcoin Core discussions. Are there other examples? Is this more, you know, is this happening all over the internet? I mean, I definitely agree with you that there is, you know, conversations being shut down in the r/Bitcoin forum. But I also kind of it would be nice if it was an open discussion, but I also kind of understand why that would happen in that specific forum.
Yeah, I'd have a little bit less of a problem with it happening on that specific forum if the rules were applied consistently. But they allow people to say all sorts of negative things about Bitcoin Cash or any other Litecoin. You can talk about any other altcoin. You can talk about them all day long over there, and the posts won't be deleted. But the moment you say anything positive about Bitcoin Cash specifically, that's when they start deleting posts and really go crazy. And the same is true on BitcoinTalk.org. And Bitcoin.org, for that matter. If you go on Bitcoin.org and read the very front page of that, it's basically a pack of lies or things that have nothing to do with the current version of Bitcoin Core. It says, I think, fast worldwide cheap transactions or something to that effect. I can pull it up right now. And all that is true of Bitcoin Cash. It says fast peer-to-peer transactions with low processing fees. That doesn't apply to Bitcoin Core one bit. The transactions take longer than they ever before, and the average fee is somewhere in the ballpark of $50 for a single Bitcoin transaction at this point, and sometimes it's thousands of dollars for a single transaction. That certainly doesn't qualify as low fee, whereas all the stuff that's mentioned on Bitcoin.org clearly describes Bitcoin Cash. If you read the original white paper, it's talking about a peer-to-peer electronic cash system. That's what Bitcoin Cash is. Bitcoin Core has basically become some sort of a science project for a bunch of people that aren't interested in giving every single person on the planet the ability to transact with anybody else without needing permission or being able to be controlled by governments. And for me, that's why I got involved in Bitcoin. That was the entire point, was to give every single person on the planet 100% complete control of their own money. And the people behind Bitcoin Core don't seem to share that interest at all. And they're engaging in a bunch of censorship on top of that. So that's why
I'm leaning towards your side. And again, this is just based on my own interests, right? Like, I want a transactional currency. I run a website that accepts subscription payments, that accepts donations. I used to enjoy getting even small contributions in Bitcoin years ago. I mean, aside from a couple large payments, which are the only ones I really think there's a point of doing today using Core, I've seen that pretty much dry up. I can also tell you that at Porkfest, I know you've been to the Porcupine Freedom Festival in the past. The last year, there was virtually nothing happening with Bitcoin Core. I mean, this was, you know, before the fork, Bitcoin Core was all there was, as far as Bitcoin was concerned. But that was, you know, also concerning. So, and, you know, as far as right now, I'm happy to hold the Bitcoin Core that I have for the very reasons that the Core people are offering up as a store of value, even though that's not why I originally got into it. But I'm obviously working very hard to deepen my position on Bitcoin Cash, because that's the Bitcoin that I want to use. I mean, that's what my original, that's what lines up with my original goals. But Roger, if you say that there's people who want to make Bitcoin Core more difficult to use, to make the fees higher, to slow things down, there are going to be people in my audience who are more on that side who are going to say that that sounds like a straw man. So why are you saying that they want that? Like, what are their goals?
They've openly said that they want that. So it's not me straw manning them. In fact, I put together a whole slideshow and did a presentation on it. You can, if you go on YouTube and search for Roger Ver, like economic code of Bitcoin, you can see it. And I give quotes from these people where they openly say that they want Bitcoin to have high fees and full blocks, which create unreliable transactions. So it's not me. It's not a straw man at all. You can read their own words or their own posts. And just maybe a week and a half ago or so, Greg Maxwell, the CTO of Blockstream, on the email discussion list for the core development there, was basically saying, or not basically, he did say, that this is fantastic. For the first time ever in Bitcoin, the fees per block are more than the block reward, right? Meaning that the fees right. per block were like $250,000 for a single block. And he said that we should be popping the champagne to be celebrating this. So that seems pretty clear that he's happy that the fees are 30 or 40 or $50 per transaction on average now. And he's talking about how we should just be popping the champagne to celebrate. That's just insane to me.
So, well, I mean, I'm trying to get into the psychology of that from a somewhat sympathetic position, just for the challenge, the intellectual challenge of doing so. Why would they want this? Like, they must have some kind of, even if you think that this is wrong, and even if I agree with you, they must have some kind of benevolent goal that they put out in front of that, right? That this is good for something.
Sure, I can tell you exactly what their reasoning is there. So, in more than 120 years into the future, the Bitcoin block reward will go to zero, and there will no longer be a block reward for just simply mining a block. And at that point, more than 120 years into the future, the incentive to keep the miners mining on the Bitcoin network will have to be the fees that are paid by the users of the Bitcoin network. So this is 120 years in the future. So those people are openly saying that we need to make a fee market today because of what might become a problem 120 years into the future. So they've intentionally made Bitcoin expensive to use, slow and unreliable, which is a real problem for anybody that wants to use Bitcoin. And that's why we've seen all these businesses that used to use Bitcoin stop using Bitcoin. Microsoft is just the latest one from a couple of days ago to stop using Bitcoin altogether. They've created this problem today in an attempt to solve something that might possibly maybe become a problem 120 years into the future. And for any businessman, I think you realize that you should deal with the problems that you have today. And you can deal with the problems that are coming 120 years into the future. You can deal with those later.
Okay. So let's transition a little. Let's actually, I'd want to connect this to the next topic through talking about SegWit a little bit. The same people saying this, that was the side of this conflict that developed Segregated Witness. Is that correct?
That's basically right. Yeah.
Okay, so I want to get a sense of how you feel about that, but isn't the goal of Segregated Witness, this is basically what's called the soft fork is the right term, that it can just add like a software layer without doing a hard fork. It's just a kind of update in very simple terms. Is that fair?
That's what they marketed it as, but it turned out in reality it didn't. It resulted in a contentious hard fork, right? Now we have Bitcoin Cash and Bitcoin Core, which was the exact thing that they were claiming that they didn't want to have happen. And that's why they pushed Segregated Witness so hard.
Okay. So the original idea, though, was that whether more transactions fit in a block. So whether I tried to understand the technology behind this, it seems like it's tricking the protocol into thinking that the block is bigger by changing the units. It basically, I think simple terms are best. It compresses the transactions inside a block. So speed should increase, right?
Yeah, it lets you store some of the transaction data outside of the original block structure so that you can fit more transactions per block. But that only happens if a bunch of people adopt it and start making segregated witness transactions. And at the moment, now that segregated witness has been activated for, you know, months and months, I think only 8% of the network transactions are segregated witness transactions. And so we've seen about, I don't know, 4 or 5% increase in the block size. So that's whereas we needed to have, you know, much more capacity already. And that's why we've seen Bitcoin go from, you know, basically 100% market share in the cryptocurrency ecosystem now to around 30-something% market share and headed down even lower.
And geez, it's down that low? It was like 50, it seemed like 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, and it's going lower. I'm sure that by the end of this year, Bitcoin Core will no longer be the top crypto coin in the world. It'll probably be passed up by multiple other currencies because, you know, as anybody knows, if, you know, let's say you're a Coca-Cola fan and you like to drink Coca-Cola, but suddenly Coca-Cola is going to start charging $100 a can, but Pepsi's still, you know, $1 a can or whatever the normal price is. Even if you prefer the taste of Coke better, you're going to switch to Pepsi. And we're seeing that happen with Bitcoin Core. People, you know, it has this love and admiration of people all over the world for being the first cryptocurrency. But if it costs $50 a transaction to use and it's slow and unreliable, well, maybe I'll start using Ethereum or Dash or Monero or take your pick out there, or Bitcoin Cash, of course. And that's exactly why we've seen Bitcoin's market share down to, at the moment, it's 34%. And, you know, myself and Gavin Andreessen and a number of others were sounding the alarm bells, you know, far, far, far in advance, saying we have to make sure Bitcoin continues to provide a good user experience and be useful for people in commerce, or it's going to lose market share. And we have people like Adam Back, the CEO of Blockstream, saying that people will gladly pay, you know, $50, $100, even $1,000 fees to use Bitcoin. And there's absolutely no way anybody would ever use anything other than Bitcoin. Well, here we are. We have the empirical evidence that they were incredibly wrong. And in any company, if the CTO or CEO was that wrong, they would be fired in a heartbeat and they'd be replaced by people that know what they are doing. And we're actually seeing that happen. That's why Bitcoin Core is losing market share. That's why Ethereum and Bitcoin Cash and all these other altcoins are gaining market share like crazy, because they provide a better user experience and better product than Bitcoin Core has. So for me, it's a bit heartbreaking as the first person in the world to start investing in Bitcoin startups and start promoting it in a big way that the Bitcoin Core supporters have basically destroyed Bitcoin's first mover advantage. And so now these altcoins are going to battle it out. But the good news is at the end of the day, we're still going to be able to liberate the world and give everybody on the planet the ability to use money that's beyond the control of any government. And that's a really exciting thing. But it's sad that it didn't wind up being the original Bitcoin. They've destroyed its first mover advantage.
Yeah. I mean, when we go back to SegWit, when you first were introduced to this idea, how did you feel about it?
When I first heard about it, I was a little bit annoyed, not because of the technology. I was annoyed because there was this scaling conference scheduled for Hong Kong. And people from all over the world, including myself, flew all the way over to Hong Kong. So people came from the US, people came from Europe, people came from all over the world. And, you know, Hong Kong's far from most of the rest of the world. And the entire point of this conference was to discuss how to scale Bitcoin to allow people all over the world to use it. And so we showed up at that conference with the idea of let's all get together and figure out how we're going to do that. And instead of that happening, the Blockstream high priests said, here, we have provided you the solution. We've already decided it's segregated witness. And here's how it's going to be done. And there is no reason for you to even fly to Hong Kong because we've already decided what we're going to do. And you're just lucky enough for us to be able to tell you what we're going to do. So I think myself and a lot of other people at that conference were a bit annoyed. Why was this kept secret the whole time and then just bestowed to us from on high at that point?
But my understanding is then what happened in New York would be more of a compromise, the SegWit 2x, where the block size will double after some period. And I know this didn't go down the way it was supposed to, but the block size will double and SegWit will be put on the chain.
Yeah, so we really had a bait and switch in regards to that. So all these segregated witness reporters said, yeah, okay, we'll do that. And up to that point, segregated witness was the losing party in the scaling debate. So Bitcoin Unlimited had around 40, 45% of the global hash rate, and SegWit had around 30 or 35% of the global hash rate. And for whatever reason, these people all agreed to allow Segregated Witness to activate first. And the promise and the agreement there was that after Segregated Witness activates within a few months, they would increase the base block size to 2 megabytes. So all of the big blockers honored their half of the agreement and allowed Sergey the Witness to activate. And the instant it activated, all of these Sergey the Witness supporters basically reneged on their word and didn't support it and went on this giant social media campaign opposed to the 2 megabyte base block increase and successfully managed to put an end to that. And as soon as that had an input to it, Bitcoin Core's market share declined even further. And it's still dropping, you know, every week it's lower than the week before. And, I think it's going to be in the 20% range here in the pretty near future as well. And if you thought,
was their argument that this is something that just needs to be delayed? Like, we're not ready to do this, or we're not doing this. We're not increasing the block. And because it's very easy as a layperson for me to jump to a conspiracy theory about Blockstream. You can't avoid the fact that most of their technology seems to depend on the block size staying what it is. But I really want to understand their side of the argument better, right? Just really for the intellectual challenge of it, right? Just to have a more complete understanding of everything that's going on here. But that part of it is kind of inescapable, right? That it does seem like their technology depends on the current block size.
I would rephrase that to say that their business model depends on the current block size, because they
want the implementation, right?
Yeah. They want to squeeze people out of being able to use the current version of Bitcoin and motivate people to go onto their platform, which will be sidechains, a Lightning Network, in which they'll be able to earn a small fee on every transaction that takes place. Whereas on the current Bitcoin network, nobody has to pay Blockstream anything at all. So their business model depends on limiting the amount of block space. But I'm sure they're not too happy about it. Instead of people, you know, jumping onto their sidechains Lightning Network, people are starting to use altcoins. And that's why we're seeing, you know, Ethereum is processing maybe 3 or 4 times the amount of Bitcoin transactions every single day that the Bitcoin Core network is. So that should be a real alarm bell for any Bitcoin supporter. And I remember last year around this time, I had a debate with the chief strategy officer of Blockstream, a guy named John Dilley at Anarcopulco in Mexico. And he told me right to my face, he said, Bitcoin has already won. Bitcoin is guaranteed to be the winner in this, you know, battle of cryptocurrencies for market dominance. And I told him it absolutely has not already won. It has a big head start, but if it doesn't continue to provide a superior product at a lower price, it certainly won't win. And we're seeing, you know, that the proof is in the pudding here. I was clearly right. Bitcoin Core is losing market share by month after month, and all these altcoins are coming up and up and up. And right after I had that debate, I don't know for sure what the reasoning was, but John Dilley lost his position at Blockstream for that, and they appointed a new guy, Samson Mao, who has refused to debate myself or anybody else on these topics at all, and instead he's just busy insulting people that have poured their heart and soul into Bitcoin. So if you don't like someone's stance on the scaling issue, give the reasons and try and give some intellectual critiques rather than just insulting people and making goofy hats.
I gotcha. So I did actually, that debate was my introduction to this whole conflict. And I just have to advise people in the audience who are dipping their toes into this, it's not the place to start. Make it like the 5th or 6th thing you do, not the first thing, because it was frustrating just how much of it immediately went over my head. And it's actually something that I want to revisit and watch again, even though you're saying that was a Anarcopulco last year. So some of it might be kind of dated, but probably still worth watching. So let me ask a very novice question, like for people who've done an hour of research or less. Why is the split a problem? Like, why all this antagonism and acrimony from, well, I mean, really from both sides, Core and Bitcoin Cash, going back and forth? Like, in the technology world, it seems like it's a great thing if it becomes clear that there's two different visions of a technology and both can exist simultaneously. That might be the naive part. If both can exist simultaneously, why not, you know, just celebrate that discord and go in two different directions without all the hostility?
Sure. So I think the main reason the hostility is around, I think there's two reasons, actually. One is that the Bitcoin Core people have basically stolen, maybe too strong of a word, but usurped the Bitcoin brand name and all of the goodwill that goes along with the Bitcoin brand name for a system that is not Bitcoin. You can go and read the original Bitcoin webpage or the original Bitcoin white paper or any of the posts by Satoshi Nakamoto. The version of Bitcoin that Bitcoin Core promoting bears almost no resemblance whatsoever to the original version of Bitcoin, whereas Bitcoin Cash very clearly is the most consistent version of Bitcoin with the original Bitcoin white paper and the system laid out by Satoshi Nakamoto. So I think the Bitcoin Core people are very upset with the Bitcoin Cash people because we're claiming that we are Bitcoin. And the Bitcoin Cash people are upset with the Bitcoin Core people because they've morphed the Bitcoin project into something that wasn't what we originally signed up for at all. We're not interested in this science project for a settlement layer. We're interested in cash for the entire world to be able to use that nobody can control. And the other reason why I think there's so much animosity is that now that the Bitcoin Core and Bitcoin Cash have two different mining difficulty adjustment algorithms, Bitcoin Cash can adjust after every block. And so if the hash rate has a whole lot more come on or a whole lot leave the network, it doesn't hurt Bitcoin Cash one bit at all. It keeps right on working just fine. Whereas if Bitcoin Core were to suddenly lose a bunch of hash rate over a short period of time, it could cause this cascading effect in which the Bitcoin Core network comes to a screeching halt and the value of all the tokens on the Bitcoin Core network basically go to zero overnight. And you'll still be able to see the balance of your Bitcoin Core tokens in your wallet, but they won't be movable. You won't be able to send or receive them with anybody else. And if you're not able to send and receive them at all, the value goes to zero. And if the value goes to zero, there's no incentive for anybody to mine it at all. So if Bitcoin Cash becomes popular enough, quickly enough, and the hash rate shifts from Bitcoin Core to Bitcoin Cash quickly enough, Bitcoin Core comes to a screeching halt, and that's the end of Bitcoin Core. So I think they're terrified of that potential outcome. And if I were to guess, I would say that there's probably somewhere in the ballpark of a 30 to 50% chance that that's going to happen at some point. And if you're a Bitcoin Core holder or a Bitcoin Core supporter, that's got to be really terrifying for you because you could see the value of your Bitcoin Core go to zero overnight, whereas Bitcoin Cash doesn't have that same systemic risk whatsoever.
But both of us are that, right? I mean, we both have Bitcoin Core still. How do you feel about that? So I don't know if I like that.
I'm very worried about that. So even if I wasn't a Bitcoin Cash supporter, even if I was just looking at it as an investor from the outside, and if I wasn't an anarcho-capitalist, libertarian, voluntarist type person, if I just simply wanted to make a buck and not care about anything else, I would still be scared to hold some of my money in Bitcoin Core because of this. It's probably worth having a little bit of exposure, but I've already sold the majority of my Bitcoin Core coins for Bitcoin Cash and a couple of other altcoins. And I'm continuing to do that. I still have some of my income in Bitcoin Core, but as soon as it comes in, I convert it to Bitcoin Cash because it's better money. And if you're unsure as to which version of Bitcoin is better money, go and buy $50 or $100 of Bitcoin Cash and $50 or $100, the same amount of Bitcoin Core. Send it from your exchange to your wallet, and then send it from your wallet back to the exchange. And if you do that with $100 of Bitcoin Core, you send it from the exchange to your wallet and then back to the exchange, maybe you'll have about $20 that winds up back at the exchange. So you'll have lost about $80 in fees. And if you do the same thing with Bitcoin Cash, all $100 will wind up back at the exchange.
Let me ask you a practical question related to that. How are you doing that? How are you converting Core to Cash? Because right now, as a non-technical kind of layperson, I'm scared to do anything with Bitcoin Core. And obviously, that's from a position of ignorance. I knew if I knew more about security, or maybe there must be ways. I know my friend Brian Sovereign, I just started listening to one of his recent shows, Sovereign Tech, I'm sure you're familiar.
Sure.
But on one of his recent shows, I need to go back and revisit this, but he just started talking about some of the fee workarounds. So I know if I continue to increase my knowledge, as I obviously should do and plan to do, maybe I would feel less apprehensive about doing anything with Bitcoin Core, but that's how I feel right now. I was really kind of, it was painful to have to let go of Bitcoin Cash to get into Ripple last month. But, I'm glad I did it, but it's not the way I wanted to do it. I was just afraid to use Bitcoin Core to do it. Now, this is not any kind of expert testimonial. These are the fears of a layperson in this space. But how are you doing that? How are you taking Core and reliably turning it into Cash? I'm guessing you're just doing these in a significant bulk, so the fees are worth paying.
Yeah, so for the casual user, the easiest way is to just install the Bitcoin.com wallet. And the Bitcoin.com wallet supports both Bitcoin Cash and Bitcoin Core, so you can have wallets for both. and they derive the addresses for both versions of Bitcoin from the same seed, which means if you have an address for Bitcoin Cash, it's also an address for Bitcoin Core. So if you make a mistake and accidentally send Bitcoin Cash to your Bitcoin Core address, the money still winds up in your wallet. So it makes it really safe and easy for people to deal with both Bitcoin Cash and Bitcoin Core. But what we've done is right there in the wallet, we've integrated a company called Shapeshift, which is the company that's founded, and the CEO is another Free State Project member, Eric Voorhees.
Yep.
And it allows you very, very easily to convert your Bitcoin Core coins into Bitcoin Cash coins right from within your wallet. And that's probably the easiest way right there. Or you can go to shapeshift.io on their website as well. And if you have Bitcoin Core somewhere in a wallet, you can send it to that website. And then they will send the Bitcoin Cash directly to whatever wallet you specify to receive the Bitcoin Cash at. And obviously, I'm a little bit biased because, you know, Bitcoin.com is my wallet. But the right. general consensus of the community out there of people that are using Bitcoin Cash is they think that we have the easiest Bitcoin Cash wallet to use out there. And even if I wasn't the owner, I think that that's probably factually still the case. And the nice thing about cryptocurrency wallets is you can have as many ones as you want. So the other competitors to the Bitcoin.com Bitcoin Cash wallet would be Electron Cash. I think the BitPay wallet supports it now as well. And so there's a couple of others. So feel free to try them all out and see which ones you like. But we have a couple of developers working full time on the Bitcoin.com wallet. So it's really improving quickly. So I would urge people to give it a try.
Okay, quick note. BitPay was a company that you were involved in as an investor and maybe beyond that in the early days?
Yeah, I was an investor in BitPay and helped them, you know, spread Bitcoin to the world. And they're one of the biggest merchant processors in the entire world. And they, for the longest time, they were a Bitcoin-only company. And it wasn't until the Bitcoin Core supporters successfully made Bitcoin slow, expensive, and unreliable that BitPay just announced maybe 2 weeks ago that they're now going to be integrating altcoins. And I'm sure Bitcoin Cash is at the very top of their list of things.
Right. So this is... Yeah, this is actually part of the timing of why I wanted to have you on right now, because that's big news for Bitcoin Cash if that happens. Do you think it is still – I mean, the service, as I understand it, with BitPay, unless I'm confusing it with another one, is that it gives you basically what appears to be a bank card that's backed up by a Bitcoin account, right? So it would say Visa or MasterCard on the card, maybe one and not the other, but it allows you to spend Bitcoin like cash.
Right.
Or like, I'm sorry, like a debit card or a credit card.
Just anywhere that accepts, you know, the Visa or MasterCard. That's one part of the business. The other big part of their business, though, is they do the merchant processing for a website. So I think Microsoft was using BitPay, for example, and you could buy any sort of Microsoft product online using Bitcoin. And just a couple of days ago, Microsoft announced that they're no longer accepting Bitcoin because it's not usable for payments. That should bring a tear to everybody's eye that was a fan of Bitcoin. But you can thank the Bitcoin Core agenda of intentionally making Bitcoin slow, expensive, and unreliable for that. And they're not the first big company to stop using Bitcoin. That's happening. But that's why we're seeing all the infrastructure that used to be Bitcoin only. BitPay is just one of them. We've seen the same thing happen with blockchain.info, which used to be a Bitcoin only wallet, but now they've been forced to integrate altcoins because of Bitcoin Core's policies. The same with Coinbase, and the same with dozens and dozens of other businesses out there. So they're effectively destroying Bitcoin's first mover advantage.
Right. So it seemed like just a couple of months ago, it seemed like this was something that wasn't going to happen. It seemed like there was a lot of anger online that Coinbase wasn't even going to support Bitcoin Cash. And then without me hearing any news about it, it just showed up. So maybe, yeah, their hand was forced.
I didn't see any anger online that they weren't going to support Bitcoin. I did see a little bit. I take it back. But I saw even more anger when they did support Bitcoin Cash. And I'm of your point of view, if you don't like something, don't use it. If you don't like Ripple or Dash or take your pick, don't use them. Use the one that's the most useful to you in your own life.
Okay, so just as we wrap up here, we talked about some of the biggest challenges as far as Bitcoin Cash becoming the dominant crypto. We talked about this conflict. It seems like both sides have this semantic argument. There is this thing, Bitcoin Core uses the name Bitcoin. You and I would agree that it's not Satoshi Nakamoto's, it's not in line with his vision of what Bitcoin was supposed to be. It's not why we got into it. And all of that is a problem. And of course, we're looking for alternatives. They level a similar kind of semantic argument against you. You're co-opting the Bitcoin name when we have all the development and resources. And at the beginning, all of the mining power on their side. So that's been a fight. The second issue has been on the mining side. It seems like that's a lot of acrimony generated from their side. That because of the, I mean, just we skimmed over it really fast, but the downward difficulty adjustment was something that was put into the code at the fork. So Bitcoin Cash's mining difficulty could be adjusted down when the fork happened. So blocks could be mined from Bitcoin Cash while all of the mining resources were still on the core side. Is that right?
Well, some of the mining resources switched to the Bitcoin Cash side. So the Bitcoin Cash blockchain could continue just fine with, let's say, 20% of the mining resources that the Bitcoin Core network had. Whereas if the Bitcoin Core network instantly lost 80% of their mining hash rate, it would basically just kind of grind to a halt, I think, is what the most likely scenario there would be.
Okay, so this also answers what I introduced as a kind of naive question, why there would be antagonism over the split, right? Over the two different visions, because they could say this is taking away mining power, this is taking away value, this is creating inconsistency. Like, those are the kinds of arguments they could make after the hard fork that happened in August.
Yeah, I heard them making a lot of those arguments, but I think they completely ignored the private property right aspect, is that the miners own the mining hardware. And they can use the mining hardware to mine whatever they want or not mine at all. And it's not, the hardware doesn't belong to a bunch of developers. It belongs to the mining hardware owner. And those are, you know, thousands or tens of thousands or maybe hundreds of thousands of people around the world.
I gotcha. So final question. Are you worried at all about Bitcoin Core possibly changing direction in the future and actually implementing 2X at some point down the road? If not, why are you confident they won't? And if they do, what would that mean for Bitcoin Cash?
No, I'm not worried about them doing the right thing at all. If they do the right thing, hooray. What I am worried about and frustrated about and sad about is that we've lost years and years of adoption because of this stupid civil war. And that's given governments a chance to start catching up and paying attention to this. My entire goal from day one was to get as much adoption as fast as we possibly could so that everyone all over the planet was using cryptocurrencies. And at that point, it would be too late for governments to come in and try and control it and clamp down on it. Whereas now we're looking at governments really coming in and scrambling to catch back up and regulate this whole thing and control it and, you know, maybe prevent cryptocurrencies from undermining central banks and government-issued money and that sort of thing. And that's a real shame. And I know firsthand directly of knowledge of companies that had, you know, more than 100 million users that were looking at integrating Bitcoin years ago and put that integration completely on hold because of the scaling debate. Because if they had brought all their users online, the network wouldn't have been able to handle it with the 1 megabyte blocks. So we've lost years and years of user adoption. I hear all these Bitcoin Core people saying, well, look at the price of Bitcoin. It's at an all-time high. For anybody that's read Frederick Bastiat, you have to realize that you have to look not only at what's seen, but you have to look at what's unseen. And what's unseen here is, what if these companies with 100 million users apiece had integrated Bitcoin into their platforms and given all their users Bitcoin wallets? What would the price of Bitcoin been at that point? Maybe it would have been $200,000 or even higher. It's really hard to know. But we can be sure that the amount of users around the world and the amount of adoption would be much higher than it wound up being, because all these companies put those integrations on hold because of the block size debate and people intentionally limiting the scalability of Bitcoin.
Absolutely. And you know, having that economic or that political philosophy really, for me, informs a lot of the emotions around this. Like, we talked about those two Venn diagrams that are growing apart. But, you know, for me, having this as a transactional currency, or as you've said in several places, and I really appreciate you continuing to reiterate this on platforms like Dave Rubin, we're talking about the separation of state and money. That's what excited a lot of us about this. And there's a lot of people in this space who just don't share that vision, or it's not at that the same level on their list of priorities. And that's a shame. But I just want to say I appreciate you continuing to spread that message. I, like I said at the beginning of the show, I appreciate all you did to get my community and the larger political philosophical community, of which I am a part, involved, invested, passionate about this. It's like I've seen the real life, tangible, positive results of your efforts here in New Hampshire. So this is going to be an ongoing conversation on my show with various perspectives, because this is one of the biggest issues right now when it comes to financial freedom or lifestyle independence. And I want to keep the conversation going over 2018. So other voices will be involved, but I hope I can reach out to you in the future when there's news on this. Roger, I really appreciate you coming on the show today.
My pleasure, and I'd love to come back again. Thank you, Brett. And you can see a different point of view. You decide what it contains, how long it goes, but this remains. The only rule is it begins. Happy, happy, oh my friend. You decide what it contains, how long it goes, but this remains.